Welcome, welcome to the Encourage Project. I'm Amy Fairchild, and I am so happy you're here. I am so happy that you're part of this community. You know, there have been a lot of great conversations happening recently in the community, and if you haven't seen them, join in. You can find us on Instagram at @the_encourage_project. And before I dive into today's guest, I want to talk just a little bit about an experience I had with a client last night. This woman is an extraordinary human. She's a scientist and she's a TEDx speaker and she's all these really wonderful things. And she has brilliant insights and ideas. And she was sharing with me in a session we had last night that she had been in a mastermind earlier in the week. And she herself has been working on putting together a course. And this woman in the mastermind was talking about her own work. And it just so happened that she has the exact same idea that my client has. And my client, after the mastermind meeting, just went into this tailspin. She's like, well, someone else has got my idea. Why am I even doing this? Why am I doing my job? Why am I doing this course? What do I have to offer? And we talked through some of that. And the question I asked her is, why do you think you're the only one who can share that message? And at first, she was kind of taken aback. And I can see why. She's kind of like, well, of course, I know this message. But as we explored more, what came to light was something really, really beautiful. And I want to share that with you. What if there was only one hamburger stand in the whole world? What if the person who made the very first hamburger never shared it with anyone, never gave anyone an opportunity to talk to others about it? You wouldn't have cheeseburgers. You wouldn't have chili cheeseburgers. You wouldn't have burgers with onions and mushrooms and all the things, right? And so the point is, your idea, while the idea in itself may not be unique, your insight is. Your perspective is unique. Your experiences are unique. And it's those experiences and insights and perspectives that make an idea relatable to a certain group of people. You know, I talk about it all the time. You are perfectly designed and you are on this earth for a purpose. And there is someone out there who needs your shine. They need your version of the message. So today, I just want to encourage you to not be completely discouraged when someone else shares an idea. Heck, it happened to me in the last 24 hours. If you follow Mel Robbins, you know she just released a new book. And she mentioned in social media yesterday that the thing that helps people get through and get started on activities is encouragement. Guys, I've been talking about encouragement being the bridge between idea and action for 30 years. Mel Robbins writes a book about it and makes bajillions of dollars. Now, you can see how that would be discouraging, but it doesn't matter. The point is, there are people who need my version of that message. There are people who need your version of that message. So I encourage you today, be who you are, be who you are designed to be, and share your shine. So there you go. The end of that story for today. Now I want to talk about something that I'm super passionate about. If you followed this at all, you know I'm a passionate leader. I believe it has an ability to make or break organizations, to make or break relationships. Leadership is something that everyone has access to and an opportunity to demonstrate and cultivate. Yet many of us don't feel like we can because we don't have a technically defined leadership position. But I want to encourage you that there are ways that you lead in your daily life, in your families, in your communities, in your service organizations, and you even lead yourself, and you may not know that. And that's what today's guest is an expert in. Ron Carr has worked with leaders on 6 continents to eliminate risk and gain buy-in and achieve results faster with what he has created called the velocity mindset. And I want to talk more about that in a minute. His presentations and advisory services have generated over $1 billion in incremental revenues for his clients. He has He has authored 5 books, including his latest book, The Velocity Mindset, and he has a bestseller entitled Lead, Sell, or Get Out of the Way. He facilitates mastermind groups of CEOs and VPs and all kinds of high-performing folks to really develop sales cultures. And so without further ado, I'd love to introduce the Encourage Project community to Ron Carr. Welcome.
Thank you, Amy. It's a real pleasure to be here with you and your community.
Thank you so much. Before we dive into the guts and the meat of the things that I want to learn from you today, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you located? What's Ron all about?
Well, Ron picked up after 65 years of living in the New York area and moved everything, including himself, down to Florida.
Oh, my goodness.
I did that in August. I'm getting used to it, but I love it. It's simpler, easier, and I don't miss New York, although I'm still a New Yorker at heart, and I'll be up there visiting. But yeah, I'm in Florida right now. I'm living a dream as well as still working, because what I'm doing, I don't want to give up. I just turned 65. I don't feel 65. I feel 55, 50. But the clock keeps ticking. So I'm 65 and been doing this business that we're going to be talking about for the last 33 years and just living the life.
Love it.
I have a 27-year-old daughter who's the light of my life also.
Oh, fantastic. And I love your accent. I mean, my Southern accent comes out occasionally. Exactly. What accent? When people say that to me, like, I love your Southern accent. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
But it gets really tough because when you live in New York, you got New York, New Jersey. I actually lived in New Jersey, right across the bridge. And in New Jersey, they say you got a New York accent. New York, they say you got a New Jersey accent. I'm going, seriously?
And you guys are the only ones who would know the difference, right? We just lump it all together.
I'm just going, yo, let's just get on with it.
I love it. That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about what is velocity mindset. I mean, you wrote this book, and I'd love to know what it is, and really, where did the whole notion come from?
Well, Amy, when you think of the word velocity, what's the first word that comes to your mind?
Probably speed for me.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people say all over the world. Excuse me, speed, momentum. And if that's all you think it is, then you're not going to get velocity.
Ah, okay.
Speed is part of velocity, but it's not the only thing. If that's all you think it is, you're going to get burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say that again, burnout.
Yep.
So, for example, if you're task-oriented, and you're working all day on all your tasks and you get them done at the end of the night and you didn't have time for lunch and you're exhausted, how many times were we there, but then we realized we didn't really accomplish anything?
Oh, yeah, lots.
We didn't move the needle forward and we get disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
That's because people think velocity is just about speed.
Mm-hmm.
The physics definition is speed with direction.
Yes.
And that's the key. So let me give you an example. You go into, let's say, Newark Airport and you want to fly down to visit me in Fort Lauderdale, right? So you go to the pilot and you say, hey, where are we going? And he goes, I don't know, wherever the winds take us. Would you stay on that plane?
No.
Yeah, of course not. But what the pilots do, though, is they start with the end in sight first, the direction. They start with where they want to get to. Fort Lauderdale.
Right.
Then they work their way back and they find the 3 or 4 waypoints that if they fly over them, they know they're on the way. Mm-hmm. Then they look at the potential obstacles, the storms, the winds, and then they come up with a flight plan that will get them there the fastest and safest way possible.
Mm-hmm.
So the key to velocity in your life is speed with direction. Direction being defined as where do you want to go? What's the goal? What do you want to accomplish? Whether it's for a sales call, whether it's for a project, whether it's for your life or whatever, what do you want to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
So how did I come up with this? I've been talking about velocity all my years and 33 years of speaking and coaching CEOs and sales teams because, that's one of my gifts is seeing what they're not seeing and how can I get there faster and being creative. But when I was done with the presidency of the National Speakers Association in June 2014, I had 9 operations, mm-hmm. mostly on my back for 3 years. So I was down a lot. I couldn't speak. And when you're in that situation, you're on pain pills, you start reflecting on your life. I was 57 at that time. And you look at all your successes, and I've had quite a few successes. But then you look at the things you didn't do. Mm-hmm. And when I asked myself why I didn't get there, it was simple. It was because of the stories I was telling myself. The stories that prevented me from doing it. I'm not good enough at this. I can't do it. Blah, 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 blah. So I realized at that time, I said, well, you're on the back nine of your life right now. And then I was 57 then. I'm 65 now. You better get going if you want to accomplish some of those things. And so the need to get it done sooner was really starting to push me. But what really turned the light bulb off in my mind, you know, I was a sales and leadership expert for 33 years, love what I do, help my clients, you know, achieve a lot of results, but I was getting bored. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been there, done it, you know, you want something new. And so while I was thinking about the velocity, all of a sudden I got my juices back because now I became dedicated to bringing the velocity mindset to the world. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want anybody waking up at any given time and being disappointed because they didn't get to where they wanted to be. And that's my mission right now, to make sure everybody's living in the velocity mindset. Now, it says it's a leadership book, all right? And it is, but you don't have to have a title to read the book. In fact, this book is for everybody. Mm-hmm. Because you lead your lives. You make decisions of what you know, don't know, and that helps you get to where you want to be. You decide to do what tasks you want to do based on the direction you want to get there. So we're all leaders. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do we act as leaders? Because the premise of the book, Amy, is this. What would the world look like if everybody acted like a leader and not as a victim of circumstance?
Oh, wow. I love that. There are three things in particular that I love about what you said. The first one is that you started this as you were farther along in life, in your 50s. So many people are convinced, oh, well, you know, I'm 25, my life's over. I'm 40, my life's over. I'm 50, my life's over. That's just not true. And I love having people say that. I love that you shared that. Thank you for sharing that. The second thing that you said that really got me was, everyone is a leader. And I know I kind of said it at the beginning, but to hear it from an expert who said, everyone's a leader. We lead our lives. What a perfect fact. We lead our lives. And so many of us, like you said, either don't feel empowered, we don't realize the connection, or we don't feel we have the skills to be leaders. And that's just not true. How do you get through the day? Well, you lead yourself through the crap you have to do in the course of a day, right?
Or through the crap in your mind.
Exactly. And that's the third thing I loved about what you said. So many times we've talked about here at the Encourage Project, when we talk about human projects, our greatest obstacle is that exists in our heads. And I want to hear a little bit more about that. How did you begin to knock down those obstacles or go around them, if you will, because some of them you just go around, or how did you begin to address those things to develop into this new journey in your life? How did you address those?
Yeah, so I did it by life experiences. So, you know, I've had 19 surgeries in my life. I was a very tough childhood. You know, my father loved me dearly, but he was a Holocaust survivor. And it's been documented that Holocaust survivors tend to create abusive environments in home. Not because they don't love us, it's the opposite. They love us a lot. They've just been through such horrible experiences. Mm-hmm. That they'll do anything they can to control your life to make sure you don't have those experiences. But then it's a controlling environment. If you don't do what they say, they lose their temper because they were damaged. And so you go to college and you start your 20s very lacking confidence. Mm-hmm. So I had to, like, you know, get some help, you know, to push myself forward. But as I studied it, did my own therapy, and then worked with some people along the years, what I realize is that anytime someone says something to you or an event happens, we create stories about that in our mind.
Yep.
Right now, let's give an example. So if two young kids, same age, or let's say in seventh grade, and they're trying out for the school band, mm-hmm. and the teacher comes up to the first kid and says, you know what? You don't have a musical bone in your body. Don't even bother. Go find something you really like and go do it. Mm-hmm. And she goes to the second kid and says the same thing. Both of those kids now are creating stories in their mind as to what that meant. Mm-hmm. First kid, let's say, will create a story that says, oh, yeah, I'm not good enough. I'll show you. I'm going to be the best musician ever. And they live life with a chip in the folder on their shoulder. But stories people have to understand are emotion fueled. They're filled with emotion.
Yes.
Now, in this case, the chip on the shoulder is driving that kid to be the best musician. So that's a good story because it's pushing the kid forward. Now, obviously, if it pushes the kid too forward, where they give up the family and everything else, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. And you go back to the other kid, same thing that was said, and they develop a different story. Oh, my God, I'll never be good in music. Why would I even try? I hate music. I'm never going to listen to music again. Phew! She told me I was never going to be good. Why am I going to try? Mm-hmm. Two kids getting the same thing, creating two different stories. Now, in this case, it's a negative story. Not serving a kid well. Now, here's the good news, Amy. He or she who writes the story can change it.
Yes. I love that.
So if the story's not serving you well and it's negative, when you just realize that in your mind, it immediately takes the emotion away, the negative emotion, the weight on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. And now you can go about the business of rewriting the story so you can be served better and move forward.
Yeah, I love that. And writing stories, we do it all the time. Not even in every sense. You know, I was talking with a client the other day who went on a date with this person and the person hasn't called in a couple of days, right? And so she's cooked up this.
About that.
Yes, she's made up the story. He doesn't like me. He doesn't want to see me. And I'm like, but wait a minute. Maybe he's traveling for business. Maybe he lost his phone. You know, to your point, you can make up a positive story, if you will, as easily as you can assume the worst. And so,
when you have clients that say, I can't write a book because I'm not creative.
Yeah.
Ask them about the stories they created and you can show them how creative they really are.
Exactly. Come on now. You're a great novelist at this point. So how does a person, because you had mentioned, you know, looking at the story and rewriting it. But how do you cultivate the habit of stopping and paying attention? How do you cultivate that?
Well, here comes the thing I'm going to say right now that's going to blow people's mind because it's counterintuitive to what you think velocity is because everybody thinks it's speed. But sometimes to gain velocity, you need to stop.
Talk more about that.
Or we call it the power of the pause in the book.
Okay.
So an example was when my first sales job in 1980, I told you I'm 65, so it's a few decades ago. But in 1980, I was selling copiers and I was being seduced by the copier company called Konica, Royal Business Machines at that time, became Konica Minolta. And it was right at the time there was a transformation in copiers. So those of you born after 1980, let me tell you something. Copiers before 1980, you didn't want to get near them and change the toner because it was liquid and it got all over your clothes. Mm-hmm. Then they got this big invention, dry bond toner, like you put into your printers, just put a cartridge in. How revolutionary, right?
Yep.
And young people going, not. Anyway, for us, it was very revolutionary. So they were seducing me. This could print 15 copies, crisp copies. You're going to love it. Your client's going to love it. And I said, where's the collator? Don't worry about it. I'll be here in 6 months. Duplicate it. Don't worry about it. So I started going out there to sell the copier. And I go to an office manager and I say, I'm selling a copier. And they go, great. Can he do what the machine on the third floor does? I said, what does it do? Can it collate? Not yet. Can it duplicate? Not yet. We'll come back when it can. Mm-hmm. Well, after 4 months of not selling one unit and having a door hit me in the butt too many times that it was very sore, I decided there had to be a better way. I mean, it's like the rule of insanity. Keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. I mean, that's what we do sometimes. Yeah. So I paused, Amy. I was in New Jersey. So what happens when you pause? Well, first of all, you have a board meeting with yourself. That means you take you, yourself, and I out somewhere and in Jersey, go to a diner. So I was at the diner and I said, okay. And so when I sat down, the emotion started going away, the negative emotion, because I had a story going in my mind. I can't sell copiers. I can't sell crap to save my life. Mm-hmm. Well, when I started thinking about it, I said, well, wait a minute, what's the conversation you're having? And I said, copiers, what do they do? And they say, can you compete with the third floor? And I can't. And I said, well, maybe you need to change the conversation. You know, because in my other book, Lead So Get Out of the Way, I always told people don't compete, create.
Oh, I like that.
So I said if I'm using a conversation, a copier, and it's not going anywhere, what does a copier do? And I said, well, it's part of a communication process. I said, change the conversation to that and try it. Try things. You never know. We have to fail in life, Amy, because if we don't fail, we'll never succeed.
Yep.
Most people fail. All of us fail more often. And you take a 300 batter in baseball and they're batting 300, they're making multi-millions of dollars. But that means out of 10 at-bats, they can strike out miserably 7 times, but they're getting rewarded for those 3 hits. So we learn from our failures. All right, so I go on my next call. I want to start that new conversation, see what's going on. Get to an office manager, and she goes, what can I do for you? And I said, well, let me ask you a question. Would you agree that a copy is nothing more than a communication vehicle for your company? She goes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I said, well, when it comes to that, what do you think the biggest challenge is? And Amy, it was like she was sitting in the therapist's office, laying down on the couch. She goes, can we talk? I go, sure. And she goes, Joe or Sally has to make one copy on the first floor. By the time they chit-chat and get to the staircase, get upstairs, then they have to wait behind all these big jobs. Then they make their one copy. Then they come back down for the return trip and all those conversations. By the time they come back, they're wasting so much time. I said, how much time? And she goes, try 2 hours. And I said, how often does this happen? She goes, try the equivalent of 2 full-time employees. And I said to her, well, how would you like to get those 2 full-time employees back? She goes, how are you going to do that? I said, look, I'm not here competing with that big machine on the third floor. It's a great machine. Keep it. I'm here to fill in your gaps. And what I would suggest is that you put one of my machines on every floor to handle those 1 or 2 copies. And you'll get back those 2 full-time employees. I sold 3 copiers that day.
Holy smokes.
And from that day on, I started selling multiple copies. So what changed? The machine didn't change. Mm-hmm. I still had the same limitations. What changed was I stopped living the victim mindset. Mm-hmm. Because for the first 4 months, I was creating a story, saying I'm no good, I'm a victim, I blame my company, I blame everybody else. Look, okay, the company didn't have this stuff, but I took on the job, it's my responsibility, and I still have to eat. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do differently? Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. Now, I said the premise was, what does everybody act like a leader, not a victim of circumstance? Mm-hmm. And if you accept that premise, then the second thing is, when something doesn't go the way you like it to go, instead of blaming anybody first or anything first, ask yourself, the leader, one question: what could I do differently next time? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you're part of the problem, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I couldn't control when they're going to come out with that duplicator. I couldn't control when they're going to come out with the other stuff. I had what I had. So if I can't count on them, the only person I can count on was myself. Is there anything I can do differently to turn the tide while I'm waiting for the other stuff? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you said that you had a board meeting with yourself in the diner. I think that's brilliant. I think that's something that we fail to recognize that we can do. I think what's also interesting is there are often people, like you said, who get stuck in that victim mentality. And in mm-hmm. your experience and in your view, what do you think it is that keeps us from having the board meeting with ourselves, that keeps us in that victim mindset?
Great question. The trick is how long you let it go for.
Mm.
If you start getting into the victim mindset or start getting depressed because of the story you're writing, recognize it as fast as you can and start dealing with it. Because the sooner you recognize it, mm-hmm. the easier it is to deal with it. Do what I said, change the emotion so that you can find a solution. The longer it goes, the deeper the hole you dig.
Sure.
And then it gets harder and harder to get out of it. And the best way sometimes to do it is just call somebody up.
Mm, yeah.
Even when you fail. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, you know, we fail more than we succeed. I told you this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a professional speaker. I was president of the National Speaker Association. And I run from speakers who tell me they never bombed. Every speaker's bomb for whatever mm-hmm. reason. It's not because they're a bad speaker, could have been a bad event, they weren't ready, whatever it was. Well, I bombed. Mm-hmm. I'm making this confession to your audience right now. Oh. It was 7 years into my career. I was a hero for this one company. They were a multinational corporation. I helped all the divisions. You know, I spoke at their meetings, and one division I helped get a $200 million deal, changed the way the industry bought, which we'll get into in a little while. But this one division decided to bring me in at the end of the year in the early 90s and help their team sell a price increase. Number one problem is I didn't do my due diligence, right? Mm-hmm. The VP wanted to bring me in to teach his people how to sell a price increase. There was a new VP of sales who was just promoted. He was green behind the ears. He had no idea what he was doing. So I start the program. It's a two-day program. I'm doing role play. I'm criticizing them. I call it critiquing as to how they can do it better. And I'm doing it out of the goodness of my heart because I want to see them succeed.
Yeah.
But I made a cardinal sin that I didn't recognize that early in my career. Your number one job as a speaker is to, and for anybody, if you want influence in your life, you're going to need to create a safe environment for people to want to hear you.
Yes.
I immediately made it unsafe because I embarrassed those people by telling them what they were doing wrong in front of their peers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, not knowing it, it mushroomed. And at the end of 2 days, I mean, this was Philadelphia. I came from New York, Amy. There were curse words on that evaluation that I didn't even understand how bad it was.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm in the parking lot, totally devastated and acting like a victim and having this negative story. I'm going down so fast. I just recognize I better get out. I got to talk to somebody. And I called a client. Mm. And people say, why would you call a client? Well, it happened to be a client that we became really close friends. And he and I are in sync of how we look at the world, how we view success, business, blah, blah, blah. And I trusted him. I trusted that if I shared this with him, he wouldn't hold it against me. So I called him up to share exactly what happened. And the first question he simply asked me was, okay, what'd you learn from it?
Mm.
I said, learn? But what do you mean learn? I just had my butt handed to me. I was, okay, but what did you learn from it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might be too soon for you to recognize that because, you know, it just happened. But when you find out what you learned from it, that's when it's going to turn your life around. Mm-hmm. Well, 2 weeks later, as I started processing after the emotion left, and like I shared, you know, I made it unsafe. I said, okay, what's the role of a role play? Role of role play is simply to show people that there's a different way in how you can do something. So maybe instead of me always being the hero, and maybe instead of me doing all the critiquing, I let the audience and the two participants do the critiquing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I let the two participants become the heroes because they're going to lead a transformation for the audience to say, this is how easy you can change someone's mind or the way they work. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we bring two people up on stage, customer, you know, if it's a sales role play or a leadership role play, one plays the customer, one plays the salesperson, one plays the employee, one plays the leader. And I'll say, just start some, create a situation. I created, okay, just start the role play. And after about 20 seconds, I stop. I ask them how they're doing. I ask them what's coming up for them. I ask the audience, what do you see? Then I start talking about some of the neuroscience that we have in the book. About three hormones, cortisol, oxytocin, and dopamine. And I walked them through and I said, can you see how you were stressed here? Can you see how this person was stressed? I said, yeah. I take the person playing the salesperson to the side, give them just one question. Start the role play, just ask this one question. They do that. And I ask the same question. What's new now? What's different? Mm-hmm. And they see and I ask the audience what's different. They see the transformation. I interviewed the two participants and they start talking psychologically, how their mind changed, how they felt better. And they become the heroes. And what's even better, the audience says, wow, that works here. I can have confidence to try it yes. out there. That would never have happened if I didn't go through that failure.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, it's one of the most valued things we do in our speeches that our audiences love.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the role play piece that you came up with. What I also want to really hone in on is the fact that you contacted what I call a trusted advisor.
Right.
You know, I believe oftentimes get so up in our heads that we think whoever we talk to is going to feel the same way we do about the situation. They're going to tell me how stupid I am. So why should I call them? Right. And so finding and cultivating relationships with people, to your point, where we feel safe to admit, hey, I really jacked this thing up and I got to talk to somebody about it. And also being able to set an expectation with that trusted advisor. Say, hey, I'm contacting you because I went down in a ball of flames and I either want you to just let me bitch about it, or I want you to give me feedback, or I want you to give me guidance on how to do it better in the future. I think that really helps.
So what you're really saying is, if you're going to call someone, be very clear in your ask.
Yes.
As to what you want. Otherwise, they can go in any different direction.
Yes. And I'm sure you've experienced this. We call somebody and we're pissed off about something and they feed into that and they commiserate with us. And then you're
makes
like,
us feel worse.
I know. I'm like, I just hung up the phone and I feel shittier than I did when I called. So setting an expectation with your trusted advisor, I think that's beautiful. And I love that I don't get the impression that you beat yourself up. I think one of the things
I did.
Well, but you didn't beat yourself up so much that you quit. And I know
for those 2 weeks, I was ready to quit.
Oh, wow.
I was thinking about what am I going to do for a living? No, trust me. One thing I do a great job is beat myself up.
Well, so then that brings me to a point then that maybe is an opportunity for us to look at things differently. You know,
And there's a reason why I beat myself and a lot of us. So when I was having my back problems, a friend of mine said, you should read this book, Healing Back Pain by John Sarno. Everybody should get that book, Healing Back Pain by John Sarno, S-A-R-N-O. And the reason is he was a pain med doc in 1980 at NYU. And he couldn't understand how people with these back injuries, you know, but the scans weren't that bad. How could they have so much pain? If the nerve is dead, how is that causing pain? So he went into study the body more, the brain. He realized that when the brain gets to the subconscious, where a lot of stuff is that we don't want to see, it creates pain as a diversion.
Mm.
And the thing he found out in the studies is that two of the things that lead to this faster than anything else is our need for perfectionism and goodism.
Yeah.
Some people, and I have both because of how I grew up. So I was always making sure everybody's happy, everybody's doing this. But, you know, oh my God, I mean, you got so many things to worry about. That's how, am I good enough for this? That's when I would start creating pain because of my negative thoughts up there. Mm-hmm. And the perfectionism, my God, I had to do everything perfect when I was younger. Otherwise, I get the heck beaten out of me.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a 6 other criteria he also identified it with. But those were the 2 main behaviors. So it's a great book. It's not, if you don't have back pain, don't worry about it, read it, but it'll open your eyes up to a lot of, and it's an easy read.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. The brain is magnificent in being able to get us to focus on things differently by all of its various triggers that it can pull for us.
And we give it the tools or it could take us a totally different way and be negative.
Yes, absolutely. I love that you mentioned too that when you spoke with your trusted advisor, the first question was, what did you learn or what was the lesson? And I think, at least in my experience in working with clients, that's often the hardest place to get to is to, at least for me, it's so hard sometimes to get over my ego. There's no lesson for me to learn here. I know this thing. I don't have to learn any lesson. And then when I get over myself, ask the question at that point.
And what he did that time, he didn't push.
Mm-hmm.
He just said, you know what, right now you're really upset, you know, you're down in the dumps, you know, have your pity party. But when you're ready to get out of it, this is what you need to figure out. Now, my pity party only lasted 2 weeks and I got out of it because of my call to him. Even though he didn't give me advice, when he put that germ of an idea in my mind is that, what did you learn from it to gain something positive? And so when I finally got ready, that's what I was looking for. So that was the carrot that was holding out for me to start thinking differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that you said that you let yourself have your pity party for 2 weeks. I think we often feel pressure to be super resilient. That word has been thrown around so nonchalantly lately that, that we can, perfection. I believe, cause more harm than good by pushing ourselves to feel all the emotions super fast and get forward. So what would you say to someone? Yeah. What would you say to someone who struggles with giving themselves what I call grace to feel bad and slog through all that before they look for the lesson? How would you encourage someone to do that?
If they want velocity, mm-hmm. that's what they have to do.
Yeah.
It's like getting divorced or losing someone who passed away. You know, there's these six, you know, stages of grief that you have to go through. Mm-hmm. And if you push it through faster than you should, and it's not about time. It's about making sure you went through each stage. Some people can mm-hmm. go through faster than others. But if you haven't gone through the stages mm-hmm. and you're pushing it through because you're saying, oh, I'm strong enough, I can do it and blah, blah, blah. Nah, all it's going to do is the unresolved things are what's going to come and bite you back in the future, and what's going to hold you back. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine who I worked with, you know, when I was in sales first before I started the speaking business 33 years ago, Giovanni, great guy, had a great marriage. And then I was in his office one day and he was getting divorced. I said, you are getting divorced? And then I said, you know, I want to go out with this woman. You know, I really dig her, but she won't go out with me. What do you think I can do to get her to say yes? And he gets up and he closes his door and he sits down and he goes, look, I told you I'm getting divorced. I go, yeah. He goes, let me tell you the fact about life. I said, okay. He goes, if you have an issue with somebody else and you don't resolve it and you put a Band-Aid over it, and then you keep doing that, and then by the time a huge issue comes, before you can deal with that issue, you got to deal with all the unresolved Band-Aids. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do? You're going to force this woman to go out with you? And you're probably good. You're a good salesperson. But if you didn't resolve the issue as to what she was thinking about and what was holding her back, then the next time something happens, that comes up, and next time, and then you have to resolve all those things. So, you know, the issue is that you got to go through those stages of grief. Mm-hmm. If you don't, there'll be the Band-Aids you put on things. And then the next time something big comes up because you didn't resolve it so you can move forward, you're going to have to deal with all those issues. So the bottom line is, sooner or later, Amy, you're going to deal with the six stages of grief.
Yep.
The question is, why don't you do it in the beginning, get it over with so you can get to where you want to be in life?
Yeah. Do it in tiny bits instead of one big pile when it all comes crashing down.
Or do it when it happens.
Yes.
Instead of avoiding it or putting it off. That's the key.
Yes. I love that. I think oftentimes people aren't willing to to be frank about the fact that there is a process that we go through. There are stages. Sorry, it ain't pretty, but there are things that you have to go through to get to a certain result.
Yep.
So when you talk about velocity, so we've talked about a lot so far. We talked about overcoming the mindset and the stories that we create. And we talked about creating the pause where we actually ask the question, you know, what could I have done differently or what could I contribute differently? And then engaging advisors and seeking the lesson. So if you put those things together and those, if I understand correctly, generate the environment for velocity, how does a person know that they have optimized or they are working in a state of velocity? How do they know?
When they're achieving what's important to them and they're not wasting their time on things that are not important to them.
How much time do we waste on non-important things?
Or when they are achieving things because they were able to get people to follow them, mm-hmm. buy into it, and they're achieving better results faster. That's how they know.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get people to buy into it? I know that's a huge question, but...
Well, it goes with what we talked about in that role play. So the first thing that in influence, there's two parts of the body you got to consider, the heart and the mind. Mm-hmm. So if I want to influence you to do something, I go straight to the issue I want you to do, and I tell you all the features that's going to be and all the benefits. That's a mindful conversation. Mm-hmm. You're not listening to me at that time. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't create the emotional connection. Mm-hmm. The emotional connection is about you. The emotional connection is about what's important to you. Where do you want to go? What's stopping you? Mm-hmm. And then I present my idea in context to what's important to you. So let me give you an example. Well, before I do that. So if you're going to act like a leader, before you have the influential conversation, the first thing you have to do is create a safe environment for people to want to have that conversation.
Yes.
That's your job. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a CEO's office. He's on retainer for a few years. One of his production supervisors comes storming in and is really upset. And he goes, well, Dan, this person's on a cell phone. So what's the problem? He's late and he's making everybody else late. So what'd you do? I went and told him to get the damn cell phone. Mm-hmm. What did he do? He said, why? Everybody else is on a cell phone. What'd you do? I yelled at him to get off the cell phone and stormed away. I said, well, how well did that serve you? So we role played it where he was that guy and I was him and I was giving him the same argument and he stopped. He goes, forget it. I can see I wouldn't have gotten off the cell phone for me either, mm-hmm. was his answer. Mm-hmm. So I said, what do we know about being employed? He wants to become a master welder. What do you need for that? Quality and timeliness. How's his quality? Perfect. That's why we love him. Mm-hmm. How's his timeliness? Usually he's on time, but this time he's 20 minutes late and he's making everybody else late. I said, now you're going to go back to that guy and change the conversation. You're going to go and say, hey, you want to be a master welder, right? He goes, yeah. You know, there's two things you need, quality and timeliness. Quality is perfect. We love you. His timeliness, you're usually on time, but in this one job, you're 20 minutes late. What do you think we can do to get you back on time so you stay on that track to becoming a master welder? Mm-hmm. Miraculously, the concept of the cell phone never came up. And the employee started volunteering ideas on how he can get the job back on time.
Sure.
So what happened? The first time the supervisor went to the guy, he was trying to fix something. He was emotionally upset. And he's storming down the factory floor. And everybody can see him. So what's everybody doing? Oh, the duck. I hope he's not coming here. All the antennae are going up. You know, bend the bridges. You know, incoming, incoming. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden he comes to you. And the first thing he starts yelling at you to, hey, get off the damn cell phone. Well, cortisol is the first hormone we talk about in fight or flight. Your job, if you create a safe environment, is you're getting their cortisol at a level that will allow them to be engaged. Mm. If the cortisol is one or two, they're not really thinking it's not hurting them. But if they're getting stressed out, they're six or getting really defensive or ticked off at an eight or nine, they're not even listening to you.
Right.
You need to get it down to a 3 to 5. So on the first one, he comes storming down, guy's cortisol, whoo, 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 whoo. You know, man the bridges. He comes closer, the steam's coming out of his head, cortisol's going higher, then he yells at you, you're at a 10. And then he's not doing anything but what? CYA, cover your,
yep.
You know the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And so all they're doing now is they're creating the big issue about a cell phone, which is not the issue. Mm-hmm. The issue was being late.
Right.
So they made that the war versus the battle it was. And that's why people are going after the wrong thing. And that's why they lose velocity. Mm-hmm. So when he had that conversation with me, what motivates the person and everything else, he changed the conversation. So he's walking out there more calmer. He's not alerting people's cortisol to go up. And he starts the conversation about that person, what was important to them. And the moment he asked that first question, the guy's cortisol came down. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, okay, you're here. Okay, yeah, I'm late. What can you do? And he started becoming creative. That's your job as a leader. You can't get to anywhere you want just by yourself. You have to do it for the efforts of others. If you're going to get people enrolled, you got to do it for their reasons, not yours. So what are you going to do to create a safe environment that allows them to want to engage? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, when you present in context to what's important to them, where they're trying to go, they'll more than likely say yes to you.
Wow. I love that. And that's what then in turn continues your velocity as a leader.
Right.
I love it. Love it. So we've talked about a ton of things today, and I am so grateful for your time and for your wisdom and your insights. How can folks learn more about you or get in touch with you?
Well, number one, if you accept the fact that you're a leader and we are all leaders and you want to get a better life, you know, do things better or whatever, or get over some obstacles, we invite you to go to the website, velocitymindset.com. Mm-hmm. Velocitymindset.com. A couple of free resources there. Number one, there's a free leadership assessment. It's just simple 5 questions. You gauge yourself. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, you're going to get the tips and recommendations on how you can move forward in each of those areas. So that's totally free. It's a great resource. Second thing is we ask for your email. Why? Because on Fridays, we release new videos that I make on the Velocity Mindset, or sometimes the interviews of what I do of leading experts. And if you want those videos to stay in the velocity mindset conversation, we need your email to do that. That's all. We're not going to sell to you or anything else. And then the other thing is you are invited to get a free chapter of the book. Or if you want, simply go to Amazon. The link's right there and buy the book in any format that you want. Kindle, Audible, and or the hard copy. VelocityMindset.com.
I love it. Thank you so much. And I'll put all that stuff in the show notes, folks, so that you have it easily accessible. Thank you so much for being here today. I so appreciate everything that you've shared.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. It was a real pleasure.
Of course. So as you get ready to wrap up today's episode and you get ready to hit stop, what action can you take today? And I would encourage you before the end of the day today to take the assessment that Ron mentioned, the leadership assessment on his website. I'll put the link in the show notes. You may be surprised at what a leader you truly are. And then as you head into reflection today, the ahas, the oh no's, and the yippees, the ahas are what'd you learn, and the oh no's are what do you still have questions about, and the yippees are what can you celebrate? I would ask you to consider, what lessons can you learn from your most recent struggle, whether that's professionally or in a relationship or in an activity? What lesson, if you're ready to look for it, can you learn from your most recent struggle? So that's it for today's episode, friends. Let's continue the conversation. You can find us at theencourageproject.com. You can also find us on Instagram at the_encourage_project. And you can always send me a note to hello@theencourageproject.com. Have a great week. Be safe, be well, and shine.